Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In the 19th and 20th incarnations, the Lord advented Himself as Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna in the family of Vrishni, the Yadu dynasty. And by so doing, He removed the burden of the world. Purport. The specific mention of the word Bhagawan in this text indicates that Balaram and Krishna are original forms of the Lord. This will be further explained later. Lord Krishna is not an incarnation of the Purusha, as we learn from the beginning of this chapter. He is directly the original personality of Godhead, and Balaram is His first plenary manifestation. From Baladev, the first phalanx of plenary expansions, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Aniruddha, and Prajumna expands. Lord Shri Krishna is Vasudev, and Baladev is Sankarshan. Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki. Om Aganatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuramilitangena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Gena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gurun Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tamsa Jivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So verse again. Ekanovimshe vimshati me Vrishnishu prapya janmani Rama Krishna viti bhuvo Bhagavan aharad baram. In the 19th and 20th incarnations, the Lord advented Himself as Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna in the family of Vrishni, the Yadu dynasty. And by so doing, He removed the burden of the world. So, such a wonderful verse to have the opportunity to speak on, the appearance of Lord Krishna. And it's not even Jamashtami, so this is good. Or the appearance day of Lord Balaram. Usually these verses are chosen on those occasions. So, back at the beginning of the Bhagavatam. So this section, the conversation between the sages of Naimisharanya and Suta Goswami, going on. And this chapter specifically, Sutta Goswami is answering the fifth question that the sages have asked. The sages inquired with six questions in the first chapter. And succinctly, and as the Bhagavatam unfolds, and Sutta Goswami is answering. But here specifically speaking about the Leela incarnations of the Lord. At the beginning of this chapter, he also speaks about the Purusha avatars, which was the fourth question, because the sages were inquiring what is the source of the incarnations. And so Sutta Goswami explains that is the Purusha avatars. So he discussed that in the second chapter. But now in the third chapter, he mentions it again at the beginning, as they are the first expansion, or the first incarnations. Actually, they're known as amsas. They are portions, but complete portions. Whereas I think the famous verse mentions the kala. That's also a portion, an expansion, but it's not complete, like the first one is complete expansion of Vishnu, of Krishna. So like this, the Purusha avatars are mentioned. And then the list is given of these, 22 different incarnations. And interesting how Sutta Goswami is giving these incarnations also. He starts with, anyone remembers what the first one was? No? Not far off? Purusha is given, but they're given as the source, so they're not really counted in this list of Leela avatars. Yeah, the four Kumaras were given as the first incarnation of the Lord, and we know that they were the first. I always wondered why it wasn't Brahma, because he's also sometimes considered, but I guess in this situation he wasn't exactly an incarnation, he was Jiva. But we know that sometimes if there's no Jiva qualified to take the post, even the Lord takes the position of Lord Brahma, so he'll expand himself. But Lord Brahma is also considered an incarnation, but not a Leela avatar. He's considered one of the Guna avatars. Yeah, so Lord Brahma is considered a Guna avatar, but he's an expansion of the Lord. He's not exactly, well, all of the avatars are expansions, but he's not a Leela avatar specifically. His function is to preside over which of the Gunas? Passion, yes, and creation. So from Lord Brahma first emanated the four Kumaras, and then from the four Kumaras next was, nope. But at least you're guessing. I mean, I hate to say no, because you're probably right. He's another one of the Guna avatars, though. So we're focusing specifically on Leela avatars. I didn't get to go through it fully and completely, but from what I could tell, it seems that Sutta Goswami gives them almost in order as they appear in the Bhagavatam, which was quite interesting. He doesn't give them an exact systematic order or chronological order. But next he mentions, because in order to expand the creation and populate the world, then there was a problem that the earth was in the deluge, right? So there had to be a Leela avatar that came and lifted the earth up, and that was Lord Varahadev. So like this, he carries on with the different Leela avatars and incarnations until finally he comes to Krishna and Balaram as the 19th and 20th. Yep, 19th and 20th. And you can see right before this was Lord Ram. So you have Krishna and Balaram, 10th canto. Lord Ram is 9th canto, right? And then the other avatars before that, Vamana, which is the 8th canto. So like that, he gives them in a sort of, in the way that the Bhagavatam unfolds. Now, the big question is that Krishna and Balaram are mentioned here as Leela avatars. And that can be confusing, because they're listed as Leela avatars. And many times we meet people and speak to persons, especially those persons from Indian background, who often say that, no, Krishna is simply a avatar. an avatar of Lord Vishnu. And Vishnu is the supreme. And of course, those are always exciting conversations. Because that's when you need to pull out all of the quotes. But generally, for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we pull out the Paribhakta Sutra, which is a few verses away. And we say, no, 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 Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. And they say, where's that from? We say, it's from the Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, which is the creme de la creme of all the Vedic literatures. So this verse explains that very clearly that Krishna is the original source of all the incarnations, although he is also, in one sense, a Leela avatar, because Krishna himself, as far as I understand, he doesn't always appear himself in every Dwarpa Yuga, just like Lord Chaitanya isn't the same Lord Chaitanya in every Kali Yuga, right? Does that make sense? So Krishna himself, he doesn't appear in every Dwarpa Yuga as Krishna, but he always appears just before the Lord Chaitanya that we just had appear 500 years ago. So once in a day of Lord Brahma, Lord Krishna himself personally comes. And in that way, he is the original source of all the avatars, of the Purusha avatars. They emanate from him. So in this way, this Paribhakta Sutra is explaining, Paribhasa Sutra is the verse that Jiva Goswami, he founds the entire, I think it's the Krishna Sandarbha. Krishna Sandarbha is based wholly and solely on this one verse substantiating Krishna as the Supreme. And so for us, this is exceptionally important because otherwise we would have to find out who is the Supreme. And then we would start to worship him, just like in some recently been listening to lectures from Srila Prabhupada where he's talking with people and gets into the conversation about vegetarianism. And he says, but we're not vegetarians. He says, we're, some places he says Krishnatarians, and other places he says Prashadatarians. He says, we eat what Krishna says to eat. So because Krishna says it, then we do it. If he said to eat something else, then we would eat that. So he says, so we're not exactly vegetarians. Although, of course, in other places, Prabhupada explains how important it is that people become vegetarian because the eating of meat is pretty much the most degraded situation. And one place, Srila Prabhupada explains that if a devotee falls, you know, from the regulative principles, once they get to the point of eating meat, then it's very, very difficult for them to make a turnaround. It means you've really, really fallen once you start eating meat again. But Srila Prabhupada explains it because Krishna says that we do that. So in the same way, we understand, we accept that Krishna and Krishna's word, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, he explains, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajanti mam buddha bhava samam vitaha. That he is the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything is coming from him. And the wise, who perfectly know this, they engage in my devotional service and they worship me with all of their hearts. So for us, Krishna is the motivating force behind all of our actions and activities. So it needs to be substantiated in this way that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And Srila Prabhupada in this verse, and I really wanted to get into this verse 28, but whoever is giving class in a few days, I didn't want to kind of create some awkwardness. But Srila Prabhupada goes through giving so many, citing so many references in this verse for how Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So Krishna and Balaram, they appeared, their pastime, and the reason that they appear, and also functioning as Leela avatars, then the Lord appears, yada yada hidarmasya. He comes specifically when there is a decline in religious principles. So he comes in order to lift the situation out of deluge and whatever manifestation that may be. Paritranaya sadunam vinashayachi duskritam dharma samstarpanateya sambhavami yuge 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 yuga after yuga, millennium after millennium, the Lord comes again and again. And why does he come? Srila Prabhupada explains the primary reason why the Lord comes is paritranaya sadunam, the sadhus, to protect the sadhus, to look after the devotees. Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chiduskritam, the duskritinas, the miscreants, those who are miserly. He comes to do what? Vinashaya, to finish them off, to annihilate them, and to dharma samstarpanataya, to reestablish the principles of religiosity. So the Lord appears specifically for these functions, and we see that he does that. And together him and Balaram perform their amazing pastimes in order to reestablish the principles of religion and protect the devotees. And their pastimes are unlimited. And the more that we hear about the pastimes, then the more that we become purified, and the more that our relationship with the Supreme Lord naturally develops. Actually, this verse is so wonderfully positioned at the very beginning of the Bhagavatam. Recently, I've been exceptionally inspired by the books written by Krishna Dharma Puru and Chintamani Dham Mataji. I mean, really, I don't know. Has anyone here had a chance to read any of their books? Especially the second canto one, as soon as I started it, because I also started rereading the Bhagavatam again after reading the books, because it was so inspirational. And the way that they shed so much light on the conversation that's happening and kind of fill in the blanks in the background so that the story and the visuals really manifest so gloriously, and you kind of get the whole experience. I remember once a devotee, he used to distribute books on Oxford Street, and he used to tell people, because we would stand outside of one place sometimes where people were going in to buy these big home cinema systems, and he would say, "You don't need to buy a home, this is the best home cinema system right here." And he put the Bhagavatam. He said, "This is just the beginning, but we've got many volumes, just like so many movies are coming out. This one, number 4, number 5, number 15. He said, "We've got so many volumes." He said, "This is the best home cinema system. You just read the Bhagavatam and let the Lord's pastimes manifest." But in this beginning of this second canto about creation, they explain how. And I always was curious about this, how as Parikshit Maharaj entered, and before Shukadev Goswami appeared on the scene, then there was this conversation between Parikshit and the sadhus that had gathered around. And it describes in the Bhagavatam how this conversation started, and it was kind of, they were all giving advice, or kind of trying to give their perspective on the Absolute. And they came because they knew Parikshit is such an exalted person that if he's about to leave his body and he's given up everything to come to the bank of the Ganga in order to understand the supreme truth, then something magical and mystical and amazing is going to happen. So they were all gathered around. But then this conversation ensues between all these different sadhus, because we know that sometimes you ask different sadhus and you might get different answers. And sometimes young devotees say, I don't get it. I just asked 5 different devotees and I got 5 different answers of what I should do with my life. How do I know? Maybe I should just decide myself. And then they say, "But I understood guru is one." It means all gurus say the same thing. But it is quite possible that they can be speaking the same truth, but just from different angles and perspectives of vision. You know, sometimes, like if I hold this book up and I ask you if you see something, text 26 written, you may say no, and I may say yes. The truth is, text 26 is there, but from your angle of vision, you can't see it. So, of course, you can't say yes because it's just not there. So there may be different angles and perspectives on the same supreme absolute truth, according to one's perspective and realization. So all these sadhus were giving their different perspectives and opinions. But the way they make it, you know, Vyasadeva is there, Narada Muni is there, so many of the other sadhus, Gautama is there, and they're all conversing, but they're all giving their perspectives from the angles of the different six darshans. And they're kind of deriding Vyasadeva, saying he can't be the one who speaks because he's just an attached householder. And Narada Muni can't be trusted because he'll change his opinion in order to convince people to do whatever he wants them to do, you know, and like in the situation with Kamsa. So like this, the arguments are going on and they're saying, well, we need someone who is a tattva darshini, you know, someone who has seen the truth. And they're thinking, yes, but who could that person be? And then in walks Shukadeva Goswami. And everyone's like, wow. Because there was some commotion as he was entering. Because all these children were chasing him and throwing stones. Because he's like a naked sadhu just walking around. And everyone's thinking he's like, you know, out of his mind. Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki jai Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai Shishi Gorni Tai ki jai. So, is described there that as Shukadeva Goswami begins to speak, he's aware of the situation of the gathering and how all these different perspectives are there. And although Parikshit is a devotee, he's a bhakta because the Lord protected him when he was in the womb. He had darshan of the Lord within the womb. And then his name, Parikshit, means the examiner. Why? Because he's always looking for Krishna. He's looking for that personality that protected him in the womb. So he's a devotee. Narada's a devotee, Vyasadeva, they're all bhaktas. So they just want to get right into the Krishna Leela, you know? Krishna Leela, the nectar. So, but it describes there how Parikshit is a little cautious to start to argue with them, even though they were presenting so many other things, even some of them from the atheistic perspective, that there isn't really any God. You know, Vishnu is just the form that we use to meditate on. But it describes that Parikshit is a little cautious because the reason he's in this situation is because he offended a brahmana. So he's not going to, you know, he's not going to open up the whole thing into some big debate. And then Shukadeva comes, and Shukadeva Goswami is aware of the situation, and so he starts to explain things from the perspective, not exactly taking it immediately to the platform of Krishna. Although he mentions clearly that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the whole point is that we hear about his pastimes. So the Lord's incarnation as Krishna and Balaram as Leela avatars, in one sense, isn't, as we say, just to protect the devotees, to annihilate the miscreants, but to reestablish the principles of Dharma. So especially in Kali Yuga, the whole point is to be hearing about the Lord's pastimes. So the Lord appears in order to perform these magnificent pastimes, though, so that for thousands of years in the future, the sadhus can be protected. So when Lord Krishna appears himself, he doesn't just to protect the devotees at that time, but he's protecting all the devotees now with his pastimes. Because when we become absorbed in the pastimes of the Lord, more we become Krishna conscious, as the Bhagavatam explains. For that devotee, there is, you know, the rising and setting of the sun. There's no death. One becomes deathless. Time doesn't pass in the same way for a devotee. Devotee is protected from death immediately just by simply absorbing himself in the pastimes. What's the verse? Savai pum sam paro dharma.
Yes. Translation? Amazing. Yes. Yeah. Perfect. No problem. So yeah, so it doesn't affect the devotees. But I was thinking the verse in the Bhagavad Gita that whatever we remember at the time of death, yam yam vapismaram bhavam jijanti antikale varam. Yes. So like that, whatever one remembers at the time of death, that state one attains without fail, Krishna says. So the more that we become absorbed in the pastimes of Lord Krishna, the more that we remember Krishna, the more we get to know Krishna, and the more we develop our loving relationship with Krishna. And as the nine processes of the development of bhakti go, that it starts with a little bit of faith and ultimately ends in prema. But we have to cultivate that throughout, and perpetually we have to be growing the relationship. Someone was inquiring the other day, how is it that the relationship can relationship with Krishna could diminish if it's on the divine platform? How is it? Because a relationship takes work. Yes? All relationships take work. It's not so easy. In marriage, you can say, I do. And then later you say, I don't. I don't want to. I'd rather not. Never mind. Forget it. But it means you have to be perpetually saying, I do, I will. It means work. Relationships take a lot of work. That's why so many people would prefer the impersonal philosophy, because then you can try to escape the whole principle of relationships. But relationships take a lot of work. And that means developing a relationship with Krishna is going to take a lot of work, and is not going to always be the way that we want it to be. Just like there's no other relationship that's always the way you want it to be. At least that's my experience. I don't, is anyone here have all a relationship where it's always perfectly the way you want it to be? Anyone? Okay. Mataji? Yes. Jai Dev Prabhu? I got that. I was thinking that. And he raised his hand too. I mean, he did it quietly. Yeah. the perfect divine couple right next to Radha and Krishna. because you're perfect. It's easy to pick on someone who's perfect. Yeah, generally, relationships, we wish we could control them, manipulate them in so many ways, but it doesn't always work out like that. So this relationship with Krishna takes time to develop. In Krishna's pastimes, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that Krishna's appearance and his pastimes, of course, jama karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatvataha chaktva deham punarjanmanaiti mamiti sorjuna, that if we understand Krishna's pastimes and his appearance, then Krishna, again, he assures us that we have a place with him in his eternal abode. So the pastimes of the Lord are so important for us to get absorbed in. The Bhagavatam is so important for us to get absorbed in. And from the appearance of Krishna in the 10th canto, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that the killing of all the demons in the pastimes of the Lord is simply the removing of the anartas in our heart. Now, I've often wondered, because Srila Prabhupada explains in the beginning of the Bhagavatam that if you read systematically from the first canto to the ninth canto, then he assures us we will be sufficiently God-realized to enter into the pastimes of Lord Krishna in the 10th canto. Now, there's a lot of purification that goes on in those first nine cantos. A lot of things are also getting removed, a lot of misconceptions. And this is something that, by the mercy of Krishna Dharmapur and his good wife, that beginning to see more clearly how Shukadev Goswami is speaking in such a way to purify all of these different personal, impersonal misconceptions and different philosophical misconceptions. So therefore the Bhagavatam is so important for purifying us, and we should be reading it systematically, daily, from the first canto. Sometimes I speak to devotees and when I ask, have you finished reading the Bhagavatam yet? How many times have you read the Bhagavatam? Well, I just jump around from lila to lila, you know, whatever kind of suits my fancy. And I'm like, well, that's nice. Of course, it's nice. But, you know, Srila Prabhupada, our founder, Acharya, he recommended we read from the beginning to the end. So we should also do like that. And it makes such a difference when we're reading by hearing these pastimes that it's entering into our heart. Shrinvata Swakata Krishna Punya Shravanam Kirtanam, that it's going in. And this sound vibration is purifying our heart and removing anartas and helping us to remember Krishna. Otherwise, we're going to remember so many nonsense things like whatever's being shown at the movies, whatever's on TV, whatever's in the newspaper. All of these different things are going to be, but we want to be recalling Krishna's pastimes, discussing topics of Krishna. We want to be brimming, full of Krishna consciousness, so that naturally what comes out, right? Like, who was it? I think Guru Gopal Prabhu, that one time he did the whole thing with the lemon in class. Was it lemon or an orange? Remember that? What's inside? Well, what you squeeze, when you get squeezed, what comes out? That's what's inside. So if we get squeezed, what comes out? Not the material nasty stuff. We know what's that. But what's deep inside us? When we are under pressure, what comes out? Is it Krishna? Or is it some venom, some nasty stuff? You know, what's in there? So we have to fill ourselves up with Krishna Katha and Krishna's appearance. So we get purified to become God realized by the end of the ninth canto, so we can enter into Krishna's pastimes. And then Krishna purifies us of a whole bunch more anartas in the tenth canto before we can get to his most intimate pastimes, specifically Rasa-lila. So we have to become so purified in order to understand Krishna, to develop that relationship, to really be on the spiritual platform by the time we get to the Lord's most intimate pastimes, means that we have to be purified of so many material misconceptions. And in this way, the Lord's incarnation as Krishna and Balaram, as Leela avatars, is specifically protecting the devotees, trying to purify the devotees of all of these unwanted things to make them deathless, so that the rising and setting of the sun has no effect, because it doesn't matter whether I'm in heaven or whether I'm in hell. I'm absorbed in thinking about Krishna. I'm just happy to serve Krishna wherever he puts me. The other day someone wished me, may you be born again and again and again. And I thought you were my friend. May you take many births. And I thought, wow, maybe he knows something that I don't, which is probably true anyway. But for a devotee, someone who's inclined to serve Krishna, really it doesn't matter. You know, I think as Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he also said, just let me take birth as a bug. But just let me be a bug in the house of a devotee, so I can eat some of the remnants, you know, of the devotees. So someone on the pure platform. Of course, Srila Prabhupada, he spoke about this early on, but he also helped us to understand that there is a principle of going home, back to Godhead, which means let's get out of here and go somewhere else. But that status, that consciousness of Godhead, going back to Godhead, doesn't necessarily have to be a place. Just like Vrindavan is a physical place, it's a spiritual place, but Vrindavan is also a state of consciousness. So going back to Godhead is simply a state of consciousness. Prahlad Maharaj was perpetually absorbed in the pastimes of the Lord, and no matter what was happening to him, he just kept remembering the Lord. So under pressure, when he was squeezed, what came out? The pastimes of the Lord. So we should try to absorb ourselves as best as possible in the pastimes of the Lord, really dedicating ourselves to hearing and chanting. First and foremost, is hearing. Chanting is most important, but the chanting becomes improved and increased by our regular hearing. Otherwise, we can just kind of mechanically chant Krishna. But the more that we know who Krishna is, the more that we understand Krishna's pastimes, the more that we have knowledge and insights of the Lord's pastimes, the more that we chant, our chanting naturally will take on a different level. When we're calling out to Krishna, we're really calling out to Krishna. Like that. Anyway, please forgive me, I'm just rambling on now. And it's 8:30, which I think is time to finish. So does anyone have any question, correction, or reflection?